Good evening, listeners, and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Philby, and I'm joined this week by Shane Lees.
Good evening.
From Mo Salah, who gets in on the act. It's surely Liverpool's day now.
Wayne Rooney has completed his hat-trick from inside his own half.
Looking for Barnes. Oh, that's spectacular.
Right, we're going to start off with some news. So I feel like the big piece of news that's going on at the moment is obviously with all the Salah stuff. So obviously, we've spoken about it before a couple of weeks ago, how tragic it was, all of the incident. But Nantes are now demanding that the £15 million fee that was owed to them for the transfer needs to be paid. And it was expected to be paid in instalments over the course of 3 years. And they're demanding the first payment within the next 10 days. And they're threatening legal action if Cardiff fail to pay it. Now, it sounds like Cardiff are happy to do it. They are happy to play it, but they are waiting. I think their words were for all the facts to become clear. So I think they're waiting for the search to be finished and things like that. And my point that I want you to discuss here is this an ethical thing to do, to bring it up too soon? Is this too soon, basically, to be bringing up the money side of it?
I think there's two sides of it. First of all, I have no idea how legally it actually works out.
Yeah, me either.
In my experience, if you pay for goods or services, and I work in recruitment as well, so if a company pays to get a person on board, and that person never turns up, they are entitled to a refund, most generally. So legally speaking, I don't even know if they're under full obligations to pay, other than I assume Nantes wouldn't have made that demand unless they were pretty confident about it.
Yeah, supposedly they Cardiff are seen to have to be they feel obligated to fulfill the contract, I think is what it is. And the only thing that's not clear at the moment is if Cardiff had any insurance on the player.
Again, the legal side of it, I don't know. It also could be Nantes being pressured by Bordeaux, who had the 50% sell-on fee for Salah. The ethical side of things, though, it's not unethical of them to ask the question.
Yeah.
But it is unethical to do it in this way and to have it all come out a bit so publicly. Because something like this, it doesn't come out publicly unless the two sides involved are actually making it public. Yeah. And I don't feel like if Cardiff is saying they're happy to pay, why would they turn around and be the ones who made it public?
Yeah.
If they're going, we're happy to pay, and they maybe said, oh, but can we, at least give it a few days until everything's sorted out? I feel like they probably could have come up with some reasonable agreement between the two sets of clubs there. Which makes me think this hasn't come from Cardiff, because so far they've been seemingly pretty mature about this, pretty upfront, even saying, we're going to pay, this isn't going to be a legal challenge or anything like this. That's what makes me think it's come from the Nantes side of things. It could just be a leak from the Nantes side rather than a full-blown, they've leaked it to the press themselves first. But it is a bit sordid. It's kind of the whole expression, wait until the body is cold. It's because at the same time, they've got to remember, this isn't just a football thing. This isn't just a money thing. This guy, his family is out there. They're going to be reading this sort of stuff, and they're going to be looking at it and going, the club didn't give a shit. They just wanted the money. They don't really care about all of this. They don't care about the human side of things.
Which I don't think that's true.
Yeah, of course, it's not true because at the end of the day, these are all people. It's like people you work with. If someone has an accident, something like that, you feel that. So of course, that's not true, but it comes across that way. And when you're the family of someone who's had this tragic thing happen, at that time, you're not really going to always assume the better thing of people, are you? You're not going to assume that, Nantes have been totally fine in doing this, or this is totally ethical. It could really kind of rile you up. And at this stage, with people grieving, you've got to be quite careful about how you manage it, because that shapes the whole grief process.
Yeah.
So I think someone is in the wrong here, whether or not it's just an individual who's leaked it, who absolutely shouldn't have done, or if the club themselves have managed that leak, that shouldn't have happened. Whatever this is, it's fine that it's happened, but it should have happened quietly, with things being agreed quietly.
Yeah, I think that is the ethical argument, because I think most people would agree that I think the money does still have to be paid. I think that's probably fair, but I think you're right that it's just too soon, I think. I feel like there could have been a private conversation of, look, can we delay all the difficult conversations about it until the summer, when And then we'll be happy to pay it then and sort it all like that. But then again, maybe they just think we just need to bring it up and get it done and sorted and dealt with. But yeah.
However you look at it, it shouldn't have happened in the media. And if Nantes are confident that legally everything's fine, they don't even need to ask the question.
Yeah, absolutely.
They know legally Cardiff are obliged to pay the money. And there's no question about that. It's signed, sealed, delivered. You didn't have any terms on, you know, rebate or refund in case of that situation or insurance or something like that. But you don't even need to ask them to raise an invoice or however it is they do it. They're just going to do it. You know they're legally obligated to do that. And if they don't do it, you can then sue them. So why even ask the question?
Yeah, absolutely. I did see a very nice idea that obviously will never happen for so many kinds of reasons. But somebody posed the idea that each club in the Premier League should donate a portion of the transfer fee as a sort of goodwill gesture. But I feel like that's probably a step too far for modern football.
Yeah, that would be a very nice gesture. And it would be
a
nice gesture for some of the wealthier clubs in the world to maybe put their money where their mouth is with all of their grandstanding on this kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even like, I don't know, a few Premier League players to give up, I don't know, 5% of their wage to go towards the fee or something like that.
Yeah,
it's a bit like a couple of weeks.
The search when all the clubs and the players are going, this is tragic, this is awful, and they still have to do a crowdfunding campaign for the average person and the fans to go get paid. That's kind of where you sort of ask the question when, you know, it's a bit like prayers when there's a terrorist attack and tweets. You're just sort of going, that's very nice to say that.
And changing your profile picture to a coloured flag.
Not a lot of meaning when it comes right down to it.
Yeah,
so, and I've got to say, I really do dislike that disingenuous kind of jumping on the bandwagon, being seen to have virtue, signalling to the world that you have virtue when reality is you've just looked at it in the news and then gone, oh, that's bad. And then immediately gone, oh, that's a funny meme. Moved on just that quickly.
But it is one of those things. I don't think people will move on from the sort of tragedies that have happened in the past year or so in football with the Leicester chairman and with Salah now. Like it's so bizarre to have two major disasters like that within the course of a season. We're obviously hoping for the best with all that it all gets solved ethically and well. And I think it is a bit of a shame that it's come out this soon when the conversation is still going on as to, you know, they're finding the bodies in the plane and things like this. You do kind of wish that it was dealt with privately. I think you're right. But
yeah,
in other news,
this time is reserved for family, and you have to consider their feelings. That everything else kind of goes out the window in the immediate period after something like this.
Yeah, and you know, there has been a lot of talk about the pilot and the pilots, but his name has been mentioned a lot in the news and things like this as well. But I think you're right that it's just too soon to be talking about it. But in other news, Spurs' new stadium, I guess it's not news because it's still delayed. So they've announced that they will not be hosting the Arsenal game at the new stadium, but they are targeting the Brighton and Palace games. And I think the Palace game is mid-March and the Brighton game is early April. And they're targeting that for the opening. My question is, should they even be allowed to play in it this season? And if they are, should they even do it? Should they just wait till the summer?
I personally don't think they should be allowed to play in it.
Yeah, I agree completely.
It's just, at this point, it's almost like, and you could look at it cynically and say, they've had the advantage of playing at Wembley, of getting those increased ticket revenues, and they've just sort of been happy to let things delay as long as possible whilst they've got that money coming in. The question that has to be asked is, if they were playing in a stadium where the capacity was 20, 30,000, would it have taken this long? And my sneaking suspicion says no, it wouldn't have done, because they would have seen the economic hit they're taking by having that loss. They don't mind having that economic situation because they're not losing money. They're making more than they would have done equivalent. So that's where it gets a little bit questioned for me. The other thing is, if you're a Premier League, like, take a look at Bournemouth. With Bournemouth and their stadium, they had to expand their stadium when they came up to the Premier League because it didn't hit the minimum requirements. If you don't have a stadium ready, aren't you supposed to be punished?
Yeah.
And they don't have a stadium. Wembley isn't their stadium. They're borrowing it. And even if you're borrowing a stadium, you've said to the Premier League, this stadium will be ready this year. And it's supposed to be ready, like, what, 2-3 months into the year? That was when it was supposed to be ready? So you've said to all the other clubs, look, okay, we're playing at Wembley. It's neutral ground for a little bit. And we have that advantage, especially going into things like FA Cups and so forth. We have that advantage going off at the start. But it's okay, 2 or 3 months into the season, we'll be at our new stadium. And now you're looking 2 or 3 months to the end of the season and they're still not there. I feel like they have had an advantage of going in at Wembley. And not doing this. I don't only just feel that they shouldn't be allowed to have this stadium this year. I feel like they should genuinely be punished in some way. And I don't think it should be financial, because let's face it, any financial punishment simply won't be enough.
Yeah.
I really do think it should be some kind of punishment with regards to qualifications for tournament or points. Because that's the only thing that you can ever really hit a club with, and it hurts. Because you hit them with what, like a £250,000 fine? They made that money back in a week. They don't care. it's totally irrelevant. That's it. No, if they're saying to them, right, well, that's a £25 million fine, we're going to work out all of the revenues you should have had from being in that stadium, and then we're going to fine you with all of that, because that's also what the Premier League's missed out on, could be the equivalent. Okay, that's a different story. But everyone knows that the FA and the Premier League don't really have any balls.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of think, because when they moved to to Wembley, there was a really big, there was a really interesting football element about it, which was that the Wembley Stadium pitch was bigger than the White Hart Lane pitch was, and that actually affected the way they played, because of the sort of pressing style that Spurs played and still do. The fact that they had a bigger pitch meant that it was harder to do, and that's, I think that contributed to what, to them losing a few games when they first started moving. But actually, from what I hear, the new pitch is pretty much exactly the same size as Wembley, so that's not an issue. But I will say, as if it is the Brighton game, is the first game that they do it, as brilliant as it would be to go to the first game in what could potentially be this very iconic stadium, I do think it would be, it puts us at a disadvantage, because it will be sold out. It will be the massive opening day vibes for Spurs. And that will put us at a disadvantage that no other team had in that game. And for me, I think they should just get told, no, you have to wait till the summer.
Yeah, the way this has worked out is they've had an advantage all season, whether it's economically or whether or not it's in the games that they can do it. Because they can get a boost from moving into a new stadium halfway through the year. That's a boost Man City can't have. That's a boost Liverpool can't have. So why are they allowed to have that unique situation? Simply because they messed up.
Yeah, exactly. Because they got it wrong. And if they'd said, oh, and it would have been slightly less annoying if they'd said, oh, it's going to be ready midway through the year, this is what's going to happen. And then it was like, okay, at least teams will know that. But the fact that they repeatedly delayed it, repeatedly got it wrong, they should just say, you have to do it next year. Yeah, or next season. I mean,
I do think, I would love to see at the end of this season for them to do a bit of an inquest into that. Actually work out if things were delayed for the right kind of reasons, or whether or not things were pushed back to advantage's sake.
Yeah,
I'd love to see that. But also the other side of things is, you know, you've heard what Spurs have said most of the year. They've gone, oh, it's for builders, you know, it's the contractors we've brought in. They've said it'll be ready at this time and it's not been ready. And you just think, what did you expect? They're builders.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever seen a film? Have you ever seen a film where the hero is a builder? No, because they never turn up in the nick of time, do they?
Supposedly it's a safety thing, and at least they're like getting it right. But it does just seem, I still don't understand how multi-billion dollar businesses, which is essentially what a football club is, can get their office built about a year later than they expected it to. Like, it is just insane how long it's taken, and it does look amazing. I look forward to going. I do hope, part of me hopes it is that first Brighton game that we'll get to go to, and it'll be brilliant. But it's also a separate piece of news as well, because they had the record amount of empty seats at Wembley, 60,000 seats. Now, I'm pretty convinced that will never, ever be broken. I'm pretty convinced that is literally impossible to beat that as a record amount of seats. Like, me and my dad were talking about this, and we literally don't think there's been 60,000 missing seats over the course of the whole season at the Amex. We think we've missed it by maybe 1,000 each game.
I tell you what, you say that.
It's incredible.
I had a Football Manager save before.
Yeah.
Where there was the Checker Trade Trophy, formerly known as the Johnson's Paint Trophy, which was fought between two under-23 teams, and they got an attendance of 750 at Wembley. It is entirely possible.
Can you imagine if they opened the top stand for that? So it's just like 500 people sitting at the top, and then like loads, then just like a couple of people at the bottom. Yeah.
The reason I know that is because it was my under-23 team, and I looked at the result, and I was just like, wait a minute, attendance at Wembley, 750. What a joke.
I forgot you're allowed to do that now. I haven't played Football Manager since they introduced that you're allowed to send your under-23s into the JPT. That would be amazing. That's like my dream as a football manager. send your youngsters out, blood your youngsters in the cup. That would be amazing. Right. In the last bit of news, so UEFA have announced that players who ask for VAR, so by the square gesture, I'm doing it on now in my room without realizing that nobody can see me doing it, but everyone knows the gesture for VAR, they'll be immediately booked by the referee. So I think most people would agree this is an obviously good and sensible thing to do, but is it strange that they've so quickly hopped onto the unsportsmanlike conduct of players for this, but they haven't for anything else in years bought in anything that, well, I know they bought in the dissent, but that hasn't really worked. So they need to do more, don't they? Basically is what I'm saying.
My whole approach is I do have a very good understanding of FIFA, UEFA, the rulemaking bodies. I've studied it quite extensively. What I've learned is you've got to take every little victory with them. Yeah. Like, you want them to change a whole bunch of things. You want them to clamp down harshly on diving, all those kinds of things. You've just got to wait for the right moments for it to happen.
Yeah.
VAR, they realised that everybody hated that little box signal.
Yeah.
Everybody despised it because everyone except the footballers understood that you don't need to make the box.
Yeah, exactly. That's the dumbest part about it.
Somehow only the people involved in the sport didn't understand that's how it worked.
Yeah.
So it's the right decision. It's a good decision. Yes, they need to do more stuff like this. They need to have another look at the rules for a lot of things that football has evolved for and the rules haven't. But one thing at a time, let's just take our little victory.
Yeah, I think you've got to be pretty happy that they've introduced that, because that's the dumbest thing about it is like you said, you literally don't need to make that gesture because they're checking it all the time. If it is going to be VAR'd, they're going to VAR it. There's nothing the player can do to influence that, which has never not normally been true over the last few years, because I do think players influence referees' decisions, things like that. But
it does make you think that all of the football players in the world must just be massive cricket fans. Because that's the only sport where they have this, that's how you have to get the review, is you make that little box. It's the only sport. The referee does it. He doesn't listen to the players. The players will go like, referee, I think there was a foul, and he'll just go, stop talking. And they've got to walk immediately. So cricket's the only one. So what we've discovered is that all of the world's footballers love the cricket.
Yeah, or isn't it in tennis, they shout appeal or something like that. So
yeah,
I wonder if they're all doing that. They go shout to the ref and go,
give a bloody box, though. Yeah. That's only cricket.
Yeah.
Everybody loves T20. That's what we've learned.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting, though. I imagine the hot topic of next season, pretty much regardless of what happens in the Prem, is going to be how does VAR work? And it's going to be fun. I know some people are still not made their minds up on it or absolutely despise it. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun.
I know how it's going to work. You know, in the post-match press conference when managers complain about referees,
yeah,
now we're just going to complain about the technology because they don't understand.
Even though most of them voted for it. So and that's the main thing that's going to happen. And match of the day is now going to turn from people complaining about refereeing decisions to them trying to work out if the technology worked right. And here's the thing, listeners, if you're listening, they're going to get it wrong still. It's occasionally going to get it wrong, and that's fine because it's about the ones that they get right that they would have got wrong. Like the Ashley Barnes, the one that everyone's talking about at the moment is the Ashley Barnes penalty the other day, where it's a blatant penalty and he got booked for diving. Should have got sent off for the abuse. I'll give him that. He should have got a second yellow for that. But obviously it should have been a penalty in the first place. I know that was a Southampton game, but
yeah, that was definitely a penalty.
Oh, it was nailed on. Like it couldn't be more of a penalty. I do understand why he didn't give it. I have no idea why the lino didn't give it. Because that's another thing.
It was a bit of a bad decision.
Oh yeah, exactly. And those are exactly the ones that VAR's for. And what's gonna happen is we're still gonna get those sort of ones where 30% of people think it's not a penalty, and because of that, VAR somehow failed, and it's not really the case.
There's still grey areas in the rules of football, and the biggest problem is that people have been sold this myth that technology solves all things. It doesn't need to solve all things, just 90% of them.
Exactly. It just needs to be slightly better than people, and that's it.
Because they reckon that the modern referee gets around 96% of decisions correct. Because you equate it over the course of a match, and correct decisions also includes things like throw in the right way, all of those kinds of things.
And tiny little fouls that aren't fouls.
Yeah, you've got like 4% of decisions that they get wrong. So all we've got to do is get 90% of that 4% right. And you're down to like what? 0.5%? 1% is what's going wrong? I'm gonna take that.
and then maybe once every other weekend there'll be a decision that is questionable, and people who are anti-VAR will kick up a fuss about it. But really, the truth is that decision would probably be made the same way anyway. So it'll be
like tennis, where they have one where it's in, but just by the smallest of slivers, and people go, exactly. Oh, but maybe the rule shouldn't be that it has to, maybe it should be half a ball or something like that. And people will go, oh, now we need to change the technology rules and all of that. Like, the debate will never end.
Exactly.
Until there are literally robot cyborgs who are incapable of error. The issue will be is those robot cyborgs will rule the earth. So we won't be the ones playing football.
Yeah, to be fair, the idea of a robot cyborg referee is terrifying. I'm imagining like iRobot in my head now, but with Mike Dean's face.
I mean, you literally can't dissent. He could kill you.
Yeah, it's just like Ashley Barnes goes up and screams at the referee, and he just pulls out like a laser cannon out of his arm. That'd be amazing. Yeah, but yeah, it is going to get talked about so much next season, VAR, and like we just said, though, it just needs to be slightly better than it is now, and it's worth it. It's going to be the worst it'll ever be next season. That's my view on it. And I think the best thing that will come out of VAR, as well as I think it will provide the steps to eliminating a lot of the unsportsmanlike conduct. Like, I'm going to talk about a Brighton player here who threw a stray elbow in the last FA Cup game. Definitely should have got sent off. It's a blatant red card. He has now been banned for it, but those kind of things are going to get ironed out gradually when VAR comes in, because people won't get away with them. And it will encourage people to discuss the rules rather than the decision. Because I think decisions, you're going to get decisions wrong. The real conversation is whether the rule should be wrong. Like the offside rule, where a player can stand offside and run into the, and as long as they're not active and all things like this, that will all get discussed. And that will change gradually over the course of the next few years. And we just have to give it a bit of time, but I think it will work out in the end.
I think you're absolutely right about the whole, people are talking about decisions at the moment, not about the rules. Like managers, when a player's dived for a penalty, the opposition manager says, well, it's clearly not a penalty. Referee's been, he's bought the referee there. It's a bad decision. And the other manager goes, well, I didn't really see it. And they just pretend like they don't know anything. Quietly, both managers don't turn around and go, we've got to get rid of diving, because they gain from it as much as they lose from it.
Exactly.
So nobody has that conversation. The second you can't have that conversation where you're saying the decision was wrong, you've got to talk about, actually, maybe just the diving full stop is wrong. You take that out of the field of people's subjective point of view. Because after a certain point, we are going, well, the technology's making this decision right only a certain percentage of the time. Now, eventually you have to say, okay, now we have to start making some absolutes. Because technology works on absolutes. It works on objective truth. So you have to have diving in all of its forms is against the rules of the game. So any of it gets called up. Or it's fine. We're okay with it. You can't have grey areas when you've got technology, which is where you say rules will have to change. You have to start getting rid of those grey areas, and those grey areas only currently exist because we've got to leave it up to people to make those decisions. Put it in the hands of technology and people don't have to make those grey decisions anymore.
Yeah, there was a brilliant moment in the Brighton West Brom game where this 16-year-old came on. I can't remember his name, unfortunately, so I'm not giving him any credit, but he came on and he was sort of making a surging run into the box and that kind of thing, and he got like clipped. Not enough, definitely not enough to be a foul, but it was interesting because both me, my dad, and the commentator all said if he was more experienced, he probably would have fallen over. And that's sort of a depressing state for football to be in, is that we think because he's not very good because he didn't fall over when he didn't get fouled. Like, obviously, that's not the case that he's not very good because of it. He's actually a good boy. But, you know, it's just a shame that that's what it's come to now, that that's considered inexperience. That for players not going down softly on penalties.
Yeah, it's inexperience to not cheat.
Yeah, right. Well, that was the VAR diving news. Let's talk about the FA Cup. Right, so the remaining teams in the FA Cup after the last round of fixtures are QPR, Watford, Brighton, Derby, Wimbledon, Millwall, Newport, Man City, Bristol City, Wolverhampton's, Wolves, Doncaster, Crystal Palace, Swansea, Brentford, Chelsea and Man United. They are playing each other in that order, so pair those up if you can be bothered to go back and listen to that. So my question, with Man U and Chelsea playing each other, so that's one more big team knocked out. So we're only going to have two of the top six in the final eight. Is this a potentially exciting FA Cup for the rest of the teams, or is it still pretty much City's to lose?
The issue you still have is when you have those big teams, they're less likely to be knocked out by other big teams.
Yeah.
And so you are dependent on them fielding weakened sides. And at this point, if you're one of the few remaining teams, so you're looking at City, United and Chelsea, you're all going to be thinking, and especially if you're not City, well, we're probably not going to win anything else. So we might want to make a little bit of effort. And City will still be thinking, because they're City, we want to win absolutely bloody everything.
Yeah,
so they're absolutely probably not going to play weakened teams. And we're getting into the stage of the FA Cup now where you're 2-3 games away. You know, you're not that far away. It's not like you're going, oh, we've still got 40 games in the season, and why on earth would we be, you know, why on earth would we be playing a full-strength side? You can kind of justify it at this point. So it's obviously there's a better odds simply because there's more worse teams in it this year, still at this stage. But at the end of the day, it all depends if they turn up trying to win. And I have a feeling both Man United and Chelsea, which whoever gets through out of that, they're both going to go for it. They're both going to properly go for it. Solskjaer's going to win a trophy. So he's absolutely going to want a trophy, and Sarri might need a trophy. So they're both going to try. And City, you get the impression that Guardiola is upset with anything less than a double.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I agree with you. Like, I think Chelsea still have something to work for with sort of the fight to get in the top four. And I know Man United are in that fight at the moment. But part of me thinks that Man United have a really, really good chance to win this cup. Like, with the amount of so with the amount of excitement that they have at the moment, and we have talked that we think that that is going to die down at least into the summer. They could keep that going in the FA Cup and beat. I would fancy them to beat City or Chelsea. So if they can beat Chelsea, I probably put them favourites to get to the final. But out of all of those, sorry, what are you going to say?
I can't wait for the final. Man United win. They beat, like, I don't know, Brentford or something in the final. Solskjaer's on the pitch, he's celebrating, he's going, oh yes, I did it, I'm a great manager.
And then the reporter goes up to him and just goes,
how do you no longer have a job? And Louis van Gaal in the stands is just applauding, panically going, now you know how it feels. I have this great image of that happening.
would that be enough to get him the job? We've both said that we don't think there's anything he could do to get him the job, but do you think that would be enough? If they played okay till the end of the year in the league and then won the FA Cup,
depends completely on fan pressure. Basically, if the fans at the moment are by and large split between Solskjaer's doing a damn good job, so he should be given a job full stop, and the rest of them are going, yeah, he's doing a good job, but why not just keep him as an interim who's doing a good job and get a proper manager afterwards?
Exactly.
If he goes off and wins a trophy and those guys who are going, we need a proper manager to win silver, look at it and go, well, hang on, he just won silverware. That's our questions answered. There we go. Go and get him. If you suddenly have all of those fans on board, you can't not give him a job. The fans turn around and get Zidane, and it's a disappointment at that point, isn't it? So it depends on that situation. If them going out and getting like Zidane or Ancelotti or something like that isn't a disappointment, and that's what they'll go and do. That's basically the only way it'll work out. So it still depends on how the fans end up feeling.
And also, like, I don't know why Man United, like, as positive as you can be about how things are going now, I still stand by the fact that I don't think they've had a brilliant game. Like, I think they did okay against Spurs, but I think they probably should have lost or drawn that game. They've obviously beaten all of the teams they should have beaten. I honestly think they would have beaten them under Mourinho as well. You know,
the only thing I'm really delighted about is Rashford is playing top football at the moment.
I'm really
happy about that.
Yeah, I am happy about that as well, but he is still... I still wonder if he's a 10-game-a-season player. Like, I know he's only really been around for maybe two and a half years now, but I still haven't seen him put a run of like 25 good games together. And that's the question for me is if he keeps it going till the end of the year, then I think I'll get on the Rashford hype. But I'm still worried about whether he is consistent enough to be considered the Ballon d'Or potential winner, which he was was when he broke through.
I've got quite a hope about Rashford, which is that he has a good end to the season, and then a new manager comes in and they try, you know, they spend a whole bunch of money on a whole bunch of new forwards, all of that kind of thing. And he kind of realizes, yeah, I'm not really getting games. I'm here no matter how well I play. And then someone like Bayern or Dortmund come in and say, yeah, right, we'll be happy to spend 70, 80 million on what it would cost to go and get Rashford. And he goes and develops at a club that's actually going to give you a bit of time to go and develop.
Yeah.
And that's the quiet hope I've got at the moment is that it goes well, but not so well that he's going to, you know, keep his place there. Because at the end of the day, I think even if you keep Solskjaer or whatever, I don't think players like Rashford really get a chance at United. Not probably. Yeah. I don't think it's going to. I don't see him being there in 6-7 years' time and not being a Danny Welbeck type figure.
Yeah, I kind of see what you mean.
So my hope is kind of seeing him go off to a club, not where it's like, oh, he's moved to Chelsea and he's just as screwed as he was before. And he's not going to go to Liverpool for obvious reasons. And Arsenal is, you know, we're forwards. Christ, what was the last good one they had? Henry, possibly? Aubameyang, our jury's still out. Do it for two seasons, please. And then we can actually save this kind of thing.
That's going to get interesting later on.
Yeah, but go abroad. Go to a place where they don't have the same maniacal attitude to every season we need to buy an 80 million striker.
Yeah.
Every season, that's got to be a thing. Because you look at those top clubs, every single season, they're saying, every single season, we need a top forward. And you go, you've got top forwards. You're just shitting them away.
Well, to be fair, I would say Rashford hasn't proved yet that he is a Premier League winning forward. I wouldn't say that he has.
No. I'm not saying
Lukaku has, to be fair. I would say Aguero has. I actually do think Aubameyang is. Kane obviously is, you know.
Yeah, but I'm just saying you take them to a place where they're not under that immediate pressure of if you aren't performing for 10 games, you are replaced by a Frenchman
or
a Belgian player.
But 10 games is season defining. City have lost 3-4 games this season, and that could very well lose them the title.
Yeah, you know, forget Kane has about 7-8 games every season where he's crap in the middle of the year.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. I honestly don't think I've ever seen a game Harry Kane play a game where he's contributed nothing.
Not goals. You're a striker. Goals is your business.
Yeah, but it's not his only business. He's an underrated passer. He's an underrated creator. He's an absolute unit. Even when he at the start of the year, where people were like, "Oh, he looks a bit off," then it's like, "Oh, wait, he goes on a run of scoring like 10 and 12 or something like that." Like, he's always reliable. How much Tottenham miss him the way they're playing at the moment.
Look, he's just a good Glenn Murray.
Mate, Glenn Murray is the good. Oh yeah, that was Glenn Murray is the good Glenn Murray. I was going to make it into the news. Did you see Glenn Murray in the West Brom game scored with his penis?
It's proof he can score with anything.
He literally threw his knob at it and went in the net. It's amazing. He's literally the most talented striker I've ever seen in my life. He is incredible, man. I love Glenn Murray. He's going to guide us to Wembley, like proper Wembley, not Spurs away Wembley. But my other question is, though, with Man City, Chelsea, Man United being the big three teams left in that, do you think any of them will meet each other in the final? Obviously Chelsea and Man United won't, but do you think Manchester City will meet United or Chelsea? Or do you think we're going to have I don't want to say little team, because there's still a few Prem teams in there, but, you know, a middling team still in there, and who will it be?
My hope is that the draws work out so that
Brighton gets the final.
Well, so that at least one of these smaller teams or teams you're less likely to see in a final can get there. I hope that Man United or Chelsea get drawn against City before the final, just because it's more fun.
Sick. That would be sick.
Or that they just all go out to Derby or something like that. That'd be even better. But of the teams we've got left, I do think Brighton are in with a pretty good chance, considering.
I do as well. I absolutely do. I've got a really, like, I'm really annoying myself by getting really excited about the FA Cup. Like, I honestly think we have a really good chance of getting through to we very well could have a day out in Wembley in the next coming months. And that's just crazy exciting to me. The dream for me is the Man United final, because that repeats Brighton v Man United in the FA Cup final. I think it was like 30 years ago before I was born or something like that. Like, that would be the dream. But
yeah, Watford and Wolves are the obvious other ones who
Wolves in particular. Yeah, and I think Wolves very well could make. Wolves could. I think Wolves are probably the one that most people would pick ahead of us, because we've sort of been dragged back down into the relegation fight again.
Yeah, I wouldn't say ruling out Palace either, because it's not exactly out of form for a team to end up getting relegated and winning like an FA Cup or a League Cup or something.
They're going to get beaten by Doncaster though, so.
I think that's very possible as well. But if you're talking about non-Prem teams, Derby are impressive. Derby are damn impressive.
You didn't give them their proper name.
Frank Lampard's Derby.
Yeah.
But the team I'm really, really quietly hoping on is Wimbledon.
That would be sick.
I would love it.
Wimbledon United final would be. I would absolutely love that. I think.
Oh no! I want Wimbledon v Brentford final. I would try. I would definitely try and get tickets for that game. That'd be great.
That would be amazing. It would be great to have a final of where it would be brilliant whoever won it. Like, it would be so dull if it ends up being City Chelsea or City United. Like, that would. like, as much as the, you know, the best team does generally always deserve to win it and things like that, I think the fans really want, like, Wolves.
Wigan to win it. They want Wigan to beat City in an absolute most ridiculous fashion. That is what the fans want. When it, if you're not a fan of these teams, that's what you want. The only other thing is, I wouldn't mind if it was a United City final, because at least you know it's going to be a good, probably fairly intense game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you said to me, right, you've got a choice between Man United versus Man City, or you've got a choice between Wimbledon versus Swansea, I'm taking Wimbledon versus Swansea every single day.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, the other thing is that if that City, and if it was a City and United final, I think that would only be better if City didn't win the league. So it would be like they would really, really want
it.
That would be amazing. That would be so good. But City are in the League Cup final, aren't they? So maybe they wouldn't need it as much. They get a trophy. That's Guardiola's obligatory trophy every year.
I hope Chelsea win that. I hope David Luiz scores a hat trick.
That would be a dream. That would literally. I wonder what the odds are on that David Luiz hat trick in the final. When is the League Cup final? It's pretty soon, isn't it?
It is fairly soon. Like, I think like it's near the end of the month.
Yeah, that could be fine. I always find it weird the League Cup final is just like in the middle of the year, so it's like, hey, we celebrate back to football. Like I was, you know, obviously there's no other way they can do it, because it'd be weird to have two cup finals within like a week of each other at the end of the year. But you know,
24th, Sunday the 24th.
Yeah. All right. Everyone look forward to that then.
I think on David Luiz.
Fiver on David Luiz to score a hat trick. I mean, you'll be you'll be a millionaire by the end of the weekend.
When it happens.
When it happens.
You'll see.
I love how you go for when rather than if. Yeah, because it's absolutely nailed on.
My predictions on this show always come true. Just remember when Ukraine won the Euros. Oh wait, they didn't score once.
Right, so FA Cup looking quite exciting, and actually so is the Premier League. So we're gonna have to look at the preview for the Premier League fixtures this week. So we've got Fulham v Man United, with Fulham at home. I think that could be a harder game for Man United than I expect. Fulham looked a little bit better in the last couple of weeks. I still look like I'm going to owe you a fiver for them, because it does look like they're going to go down still. But that could be a surprisingly entertaining game, I think, for a early kickoff, 12:30 on Saturday.
You say that Fulham have a chance. They have a chance to score goals against United, absolutely.
Yeah.
But if Man United score less than three, I'll be actually quite surprised.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That
could absolutely be a 4-3 that game, which means it will probably end up being 1-0 to United.
That is a game on Football Manager where you don't bother to save beforehand, because you just know you're going to have to do it 20 times.
You know, you're
just accept your 6-0 loss.
Yeah, your Argentinian regen is going to score 4 goals on his debut or something like that. Yeah. The one you signed in January has been injured since then. He's going to come on and score a brace or something. Yeah. All right. The other games, there's not many exciting games. The big game of the weekend is Man City Chelsea on Sunday afternoon at 4:00. That could be an exciting game. That will be. Oh, by miles, the big game of the weekend. But there's a few relegation scraps, I guess. So Palace, West Ham. West Ham probably not going, you know, not really in that scrap of relegation, but desperately need a win, I'd say, for Palace at home. Huddersfield v Arsenal. That's like Arsenal win, got to be. Huddersfield are pretty much relegated already, I think most people agree. Liverpool, Bournemouth. Liverpool got to keep up with Man City at this rate.
That could be a really good game. I'm surprised that one hasn't been put for TV.
Yeah, I thought so too. I think, again, it could be very similar to the Fulham United game, except I kind of fancy Liverpool. But Bournemouth have a lot of runners. A lot of their players are really good at running, and nobody gets past Van Dijk. So it's going to be really
interesting. They're up for the big games,
Bournemouth. They are. They're
a team that can upset people. They're a bit like Crystal Palace a few years ago. You know, when they had Dwight Gayle?
Yeah.
And you'd look at them going up against a big team and you go, they should lose by a lot, but somehow they're going to win 2-1.
Yeah, but then they'll lose 4-0 at home to Burnley and shit like that. Like, they are the most hot and cold team, so we'll have to wait for that. That'll be really good fun. You guys have Cardiff at home.
This is the big game of the week.
That is the relegation scrap, isn't it?
That's the one where if we win, I genuinely think we're not going down. Simple as that.
Yeah,
because that is our big... Yeah, that's a proper six-pointer if we win that game, we're not looking behind us anymore. We're not going, I wonder what's going to happen below us. It's suddenly going, actually, what happens if we win the next game? How high can we go? Mm. That's what happens in that game if we win. That being said, we're terrible at home.
Yeah.
And I think Cardiff are one of those teams who are the absolute antithesis of what we are as a club. They are the team that is absolutely perfect to mess us up.
Yeah,
there is no team more suited in the Premier League to mess up Southampton than Cardiff. I think it's going to be a draw.
Mm.
But I honestly wouldn't be surprised if it was like a 1-0 defeat. For all those people who are thinking, oh, I'll put a bet on Southampton, they're in a bit of form, and Cardiff are Cardiff. That is not a safe bet, anyone.
For me, it's one of those games I feel like will probably be determined by an absolute screamer by somebody. Like, because Cardiff will basically
just be...
Pretty
sure we've got Højbjerg back.
Yeah, and Redmond's been on fire recently. So, like, you've got to hope that... I mean, I would rather Southampton were in the Premier League than Cardiff. Like, that's just me. I prefer Southampton as a club. I think they're more interesting. I think they deserve to be there more. I think they've had a bad couple of years, but they'll probably... I think if you keep Hasenhüttl and stay up this year, you'll be in the mid to high tier next year. I think you've got a better squad than Everton. You know, I think you've got a better manager than Everton, and they're sort of failing mid-table. Speaking of Everton, they've got Watford away. I literally could not think of a game I care about less than Watford v Everton. It's like, dullest...
It's only February, and that is a game where you can literally just write it off as irrelevant.
The only thing that I want to have, the only thing I have any interest in is I kind of want Watford to win so that the pressure keeps piling on Marco Silva, just because one more thing to talk about. Like, because I feel like
if it's like a 1-0, Doucouré handballs it into the goal.
Oh, that would be sick. But Everton
no other
are
chances
like,
in the game.
Yeah, and Everton are like really stunted attack, like not really don't look like they don't really know what they're doing. That would be quite fun. I'd enjoy that. I don't know why I dislike Everton at the moment. I just like...
I quite dislike them. Every time I see them actually playing at the moment, I'm fully bored. I'm bored. I'm Claude Puel bored.
Yeah. Also, I swear Marco Silva's teams are the most violent, disrespectful teams. Like, when we played them at Watford, like, somebody, like, kicked knockout... Britos, like... two, like, flying kung fu kick knockout in the legs. They get loads of red cards... Like, for some reason, I feel like something about him, Marco Silva's teams makes them really dirty. And there's nothing wrong with being a bit dirty, like making blocks and tackles. But like, I feel like they're like petty. Just a bit,
I've just got absolutely no respect for a team that actually believes in zonal marking from set pieces. I have no respect for any team that does that because
it does work. It absolutely does work.
Doesn't work. We know man marking works. If you put the right person against the right person, we know that bloody works. Zonal marking is like, oh, it works if you're literally one of the best defending teams in the world.
Yeah.
Anyone else, you're...
That's what you're saying for. Actually, to be fair, I think we man mark, but that's because we've got bloody big men. Whereas Everton have like Bernard and Richarlison as their zonal markers. Yeah, I think. I could not care less about that game, to be honest. But the other game, the exciting game in the relegation scrap, Brighton v Burnley on at 5:30. If you're a neutral and you're wondering why the hell would I watch Brighton v Burnley at 5:30, to be fair, that's perfectly reasonable thing to think. But it is a massive game.
Aren't going to get more English players on the pitch in another Premier League game.
We don't actually have that many English players. That's kind of a myth that's been like thrust upon us because basically we have Murray, Duncan, Stevens. But then everyone else is
got Solly.
Solly, that's true. Solly March. Yeah, that's true. But that's kind of a myth though, because a lot of them are going to get aged. Like Murray's probably not going to be playing every game next season and things like that. We're not a proper English team. It's just because we've got Chrissy Hughton. A lot of the players we signed in the last few years have been... I can't remember the last time we have, since we've been promoted to the Premier League, we haven't signed an English player, which is really interesting because we've gone for like the value for money abroad, and it's worked out generally. But yeah, big game. I've got to think with our home record that we can beat Burnley.
It's literally a game where, you know, there's going to be three shots on target and one goal from a set piece.
I don't want either
team to get points.
I mean, obviously I do. But...
dissolve and not happen. I don't want either. If Brighton win, it's like, okay, they're probably going to be fairly all right after that point. If Burnley win, it's like, right, we still got to worry about fucking Burnley now, haven't we?
Yeah.
So can't that game just not happen? Can't it be so bad that they just go, it's 0 points for both of you?
Well, I think we need to win it. Obviously, we need to win it. I think we will win it. I think we're reliable enough at home to do it. But if you're a betting fan, I don't know if they do this bet. I would say bet on this game to have the most crosses in the history of football, because that is that is like the only way that either of our teams create chances. And if you really want to go brave, bet on Glenn Murray to score with his cock.
I tell you what, I guarantee you one thing. I'm not be watching this match.
Oh,
not
God.
Not just because it's a dull match, because it is, it's going to be a dull match, but it's also a dull match on BT.
Yeah.
Nothing's worse than a dull match on BT.
I like BT. It's just really annoying to have to switch to BT all the time.
And they try too bloody hard.
Yeah. Anyway, the last two games of the weekend, other than Manchester City-Chelsea, which we talked about on Sunday, the other game on Sunday is Tottenham v Leicester. I think it's probably a more important game for Tottenham than people give it credit for. It would really help them cement their top four place and keep them running, keep them in the running for their sort of little horse third title contender.
Win.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Leicester are crap this year.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. They have had the problem with Leicester though is every now and again they turn it on. And like when they beat City and they've beaten a couple of other big teams this season, like they turn it on and they're disgusting.
Yeah, it's Claude Puel syndrome, and you've got to understand when that happens, it's not the manager. The players suddenly realise they want to play because they go, oh, it's a big game and the cameras are on and I want people to remember that I actually exist and I won the title a few years ago.
Mm.
It's the Leicester fans have realised why we, Southampton, sacked the manager and were happier about the management we had when we almost got relegated, despite having finished eighth with the club.
You absolutely hate him, don't you?
Oh God, he shouldn't be a manager. He shouldn't. He's not a football manager. He isn't. He's not one. I don't even think he's a coach.
This is a really interesting thing because, like, I'm not totally on board with this, completely on board with this way of thinking, but it has some merit to it. There's a conversation going on amongst the Brighton fans at the moment as to whether Chris Hughton is the person to take us, whether we are underperforming with Chris Hughton. And most sensible fans do not believe that for a second. Most fans obviously respect what he's done with us and believe in that kind of thing and think that because of where we are, we should be grateful for everything he's done rather than criticising it. And I feel like people think the exact same thing with Claude Puel, where he got you to finish eighth and got you to a cup final, which you probably should have won based on the basis of that game. And yet everyone fucking hates him. And I think from the outside looking in, I don't think anyone understands it.
You've got to understand that there's a level of consistency there where every club he's been at hating him, but there's a reason the fans hate him. One of it is just he makes the most batshit insane decisions. Like, you're losing 2-0 and he just goes, right, striker off, defender on. Let's protect this 2-0 loss.
Yeah.
He just makes insane decisions all the time, or irrelevant decisions. And then you realise that the players hate him. It's so apparent that the players, well, maybe they don't even hate him. Maybe they just beyond don't care about him.
They
consider him to be like just a floating tie. There is no person there. The tie is talking to you. He doesn't exist. He's not even a personality. If he was English, Claude Puel, they wouldn't even consider him for a fucking Middlesbrough job. They wouldn't care. They'd just be like, who are you? What are you doing here? Are you here for the janitor's job? Manager, are you insane? Get out of here. Go back to Newport County. We don't care about you. But they play the most boring football possible. It's not even regularly boring. It's boring's version of boring. It's soul-destroying boring. You look at your midfielders and you think they actually might just lie down. Just lie down and go, this will do. We'll just kick the ball back and forward whilst lying down doing yoga poses. There's no point. Because you can literally have any other manager. You can have Sam Allardyce and you go, well, at least we'll be a threat from set pieces. At least we'll be a little bit crazy on the pitch and kick some people. That'll be fun. There'll be some kind of passion somewhere in there. And, you know, at least maybe if we win, Allardyce will buy some pies. Yeah. But, well, you're like, oh, it's not even fun. We haven't even got the fun foreign French thing. You know, where you get a foreign manager and you go, oh, we're going to play fun football. You know, what everyone thought Marco Silva was until they realised he's crap as well. Oh, it's boring. It must be exciting. No, it's not. He's not even fun for a Welshman.
Oh, my God, you're still going. Guys, audience, Shane really doesn't like Claude Puel.
He is literally a gremlin.
He is like the French Neil Warnock, but with like less personality.
They should use him for motion capture instead of people like Gollum.
Oh, man. So Shane wants Leicester to lose. And then the last game of the weekend, I believe, was Wolves versus Newcastle. I mean, it is important because if Newcastle can get a win somehow, then I think they'll be getting close to safe. I know they're still right in there now, but I feel like this is the part of the season where I think the bottom three is what it is going to be. I think Cardiff, Fulham, Huddersfield, that will be the bottom three. And I think we'll start to see now the teams pull away and the title race will become the plot of the season at the moment. Obviously, people are still paying attention to it, but I feel like that's how it's going to end up.
I actually think Newcastle are going to win that match.
Yeah, maybe.
Wolves do that. They go through a patch of having some really good games and then they just lose one where you cannot work out how they did it.
Mm. And Newcastle will be well up for it.
Yeah, I actually think Newcastle, they're turning a little bit of a corner.
Yeah.
They're getting a little bit better here and there, and it's just waiting for it all to kick off and them to, you know, not turn around and finish mid-table or something like that, but just to be okay.
And Wolves
are owed a bad result.
And that's sort of the thing that Wolves have slightly struggled with so far this season is like against the really dogged defensive teams. I think, although they have, like, generally, I think they can outplay pretty much any team outside the top six. I think in terms of football, they are that good. I honestly believe that they are completely that good. But I think if they lack that final bit of end product, basically, I think if Raul Jimenez doesn't score, they lose. I think that's a lot of the time what happens, and they lack a sort of goal out of nothing kind of style that I think they'll need in against Newcastle. But, you know, not the most exciting round of Premier League fixtures, but a few key ones in there. But the main thing to talk about, I think, is that City have temporarily reclaimed their top spot. They are the bookie's favourite. And do you think they deserve to be? Do you think they are still the favourites?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
I still think so as well. And are we fucking idiots? Because everyone else gets into Liverpool and we still think City can win it.
No, you look at Liverpool and the way they've dealt with pressure isn't the right way. Like, you've got Robertson and Klopp all turning around at the moment going, oh, we're not under pressure at all. No, we're not feeling it. This isn't nerves or anything like that. And they go, nobody was saying this about City when they had their little slip up. They weren't saying that's nerves. Sorry, the second you start saying, oh, look at everyone else, that's nerves. Yeah. Okay, like, well, that's like telling the bully, if you tickle me, I'll wet myself.
Well,
you know exactly what the bully's going to do, man.
Well, and we keep talking about, we always talk about narratives and football mattering in terms of what the fans see and hear and how they see clubs and behave. And I've literally got written down here on my notes for the podcast, will Liverpool bottle another title? Like, is it bad that that's what I go to immediately? That I think it's not only that City will win it, it's that I think Liverpool will fuck it up.
I think, like, you've also got to look at people like Klopp's record when it comes to getting down to
clutch moments. Yeah.
Yeah. Those big moments about win you cups, win you titles. He has won a title before, but it wasn't coming down to the last moments. You know, this one, whoever it goes to, it's coming down to the last couple of games. I think Guardiola was right when he said that. And I don't think Klopp has that same kind of nerve like Guardiola has. And that infects into the players. And you've got to remember, these players aren't experienced at winning.
Yeah. No,
they win games, they don't win titles, but I don't think any of them have got experience of actually winning tournaments, have they? So you've not got those players who can go, oh, we know exactly what's going to happen here. City, you know, if you've got John Stones is a bit nervous or Laporte is a bit nervous, go and have a word with company.
Yeah.
You might be a little bit nuts and be prone to kicking someone in the head occasionally, but go and talk to company. He'll sort you right out. He'll talk you calm. Okay.
James Milner is the only one in there that I can immediately think of that's got that kind of elite experience.
Yeah, I don't think Liverpool have enough of that about them. And I've looked at the fixtures list, and you're going to see a point where it probably comes to United v Liverpool. Chelsea, that will be the game in hand, where if they win that one, Liverpool, they're back, you know, they're level pegging, everything's pretty much fine. I don't see them winning that game. And what happens if you lose that game? You lose that game, suddenly you're now behind in the title race. You've got to play chase again. And you look at the fixtures, the way they sort of end out. Yeah, Liverpool's games aren't absurdly hard or anything like that. I think the only real tough game they've got is Chelsea. I think they play Spurs as well at some point as well, but that's at home. And then you look at what City have got left and you go, right, they've got a game at United, and that'll be tough, but City have a damn good record against United.
Yeah.
Again, they got Spurs as well, but that's at home. the fixtures are kind of similar, but in that sense, you look at how it's going to balance out in terms of you throw in things like nerves, you throw in the fact that City have got the goal difference. I think it just goes City's way. I think it goes that way either at the Leicester game, Man City Leicester, second to last game of the season, or against Brighton. I just can't see Liverpool doing it, not unless City throw it away at this point. And I think City have ridden their hump. They've had their bad patch.
Yeah.
It's good from this point on.
And
Liverpool are in their bad patch. You don't know how long it's going to go on for.
And that's part of the thing, is why I phrased that question the way it is like, are we insane for thinking that City are still going to win it? Is that actually everyone I speak to still thinks they are. Most people believe they're still the better team. And I think part of it has to do with, I feel like Liverpool, like, okay, this is going to sound really harsh, and I don't like using it as a phrase to sum up football, but I feel like in a lot of games that I've watched them this season that they have been really lucky not to drop points. Like the Everton game where Pickford drops one right at the end, we could have equalised them. We could have equalised against them when they were at Anfield. We could have beaten them at home if they didn't get a debatable penalty. All of those kind of things. Like, and whereas City, I feel like even in the games they've lost, I was like, there's only one game where they were missing Fernandinho where I thought they were bad. And the rest of them, I thought they were brilliant. And yeah, just really unlucky. Like Palace, what can you do in a game where Andros Townsend scores a winner from 45 yards or whatever it was? Like, there's nothing you can do as a team to accommodate for that. You just have
to. There's no plan. It's just
exactly.
It happens.
And like obviously you can, exactly. And obviously you can go out and put yourself further in the lead. Like Newcastle was the only game where they were bad and deserved to lose. Every other game, I think they deserve to win hands down. Especially stuff like the Liverpool game where they ripped them to shreds. As far as I'm concerned, like.
I think that's the thing. You look at the games where City have won 1-0, 2-0, something like that, and you go, they were in control.
Yeah.
They were unlucky to not have done it by more. You look at those same games with Liverpool and you go, they got a lucky decision. They were offside and they somehow, the refs didn't see it, or they dived to win a penalty, or they've otherwise just scraped by the skin of their teeth, by not the decisions going against them, like a penalty to another team or something like that. And it's happened far, far too often. And the thing is, after that last game, I think referees have had their attention pulled over to it a little bit.
Yeah.
That Liverpool have actually had one hell of an easy ride. Klopp has not done himself any favours what he said. For those who don't know, what he said was Liverpool in that game, they had an offside goal. Absolutely should have been offside. It was offside by a metre and a half. And they had an opportunity right at the end where it should have been a goal, but they were offside again. Or you just hit it straight into the keeper's gloves. And then Klopp turns around afterwards and he says, because we got that advantage first half decision for the goal, the referee didn't give us an easy ride afterwards. He was giving 50-50 decisions to West Ham. But one thing, I watched that game. No, he didn't. The referee was making good calls. The referee had actually a damn good game. The assistants, awful game. But when you turn around and you get the advantage, you get the stroke of luck, and you criticise the referees for not giving you more decisions.
Yeah.
That is one of the worst interviews I've ever heard. I had a lot of respect for Klopp. It has diminished a lot since then, because that is the foulest of management tricks. And I'm used to Mark Hughes levels of excuses with referees. That's awful, though, because if he had turned around and said, okay, yeah, the goal shouldn't have stood, it's a bad goal, and we've got to give the referee a bit of criticism for that, that's not a good decision at all. But also, I feel like that impacted the game. That's fine at that point. If you're saying, actually, I just think overall there were bad decisions being made throughout, and including our one, that's okay, because you've called out your own stuff. For him saying, oh, no, our decision was fine. That wasn't a problem. He didn't turn around and say that was a problem. But, oh, the referee, he was badly impacted by giving us an advantage and giving us a point. I'm sorry, that's outrageous. And the thing is as well, referees are going to have heard that. They're going to have listened to that and just have gone, right, yeah, I might be looking a little bit twice at all of your decisions now. I'm not going to be giving your players the benefit of a doubt.
It certainly puts unnecessary pressure on them. Yeah.
The attention has been called so much onto it now, him saying that. Because that's not just calling out a bad decision, which every single manager does. That's questioning a referee's integrity. And every single one of them now is going to be looking at that. They're going to be looking at those dives, which Liverpool have been getting away with time and time again, and maybe thinking, actually, might have given that before. Not sure about it now. And those 50-50 decisions, I think they're going to start going against Liverpool more. It is genuinely one of the worst interviews I've ever seen. I have never seen a manager have almost a little bit of a meltdown while seeming to be completely composed.
Speaking of the meltdown, you're firing in today on everyone.
Sorry, if he'd been going, oh, we're still fighting for this title and all of that lot, and clearly it had all gotten to him, everyone would be going, oh, no, he's actually gone mental. But he seemed quite composed. But if you actually listen to what he was saying, it's batshit. It's nuts. It's utterly, it's either stupid and actually downright unethical for him to even start saying this stuff, or it's insane. You've got to conclude he's insane or he's stupid, and it's one of the two. And I'm thinking insane. I'm thinking it's genuinely a little bit of insanity there. And again, when they're turning around going, oh, pressure's not on. No, we're not feeling nerves. And they're going around and they're saying this stuff. What the hell else is this if it's not nerves? Yeah. Now, it was such an awful thing for Klopp to come out and say. And I'm shocked there hasn't been more people calling this out and saying, hang on a second. This is, honestly, if Mourinho had done this, we wouldn't have ever, this would be on his Wikipedia page.
But thank you very much for joining us for the V2 Football Podcast. Please check out everything else we've got. Leave us a comment on our SoundCloud if you would like us to talk about anything specific. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.